Evening. My name's Christian Street and I'm the acting mayor of Canberra. It's my pleasure to welcome you all this evening up to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 20th of July 2026, and welcome to those joining us in the public gallery also. Could you please make sure that your mobile phones are turned to silent? And it's 5:30 p.m. I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under those regulations, I'm required to advise you that an audio or audiovisual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, pay our respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, myself, Acting Mayor Councillor Street, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Richardson. For our staff, our Chief Executive Officer, Mr Dave Stewart, our Director of People and Finance, Mr David Spinks, our Director of Engineering Services, Mr Craig Mackey, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, our Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Mrs Delise Shakuti, our Communications Officer, Mr Stuart Heather, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. Tonight we have an apology from Councillor Antoli. Moving to item 4, confirmation of minutes. Can I have a mover, please? The minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 12, held on 6th July 2026, be confirmed as a true record. Moved Councillor Fox and seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving to item 5, workshops held since last Council Meeting on the 13th of July. Council had a workshop in relation to the SGS Economics Report and the Strategic Asset Management Planning. Moving to item number 6, does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare?
No.
Moving to item 7, is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. That being the case, we'll move to item 8, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice?
Good evening. Queen Phillips from Margate. Sorry, noisy. My turn to say thank you. I've been in touch with residents in Allens Rivulet who have noted that repairs have commenced, so there's a thank you there. But I have another road question, sorry. Gallagher's Road. I've had a local resident share an email from me and ask me to follow up for them. The last email they have is from the 18th of August in 2025, where so there's an issue with the top section of Gallagher's Road where the turning circle has collapsed down into the drain, making it difficult for council equipment to get up there to perform any maintenance work. And so I guess the question is, where are we at with that, please? Because they were told that they would have some update on what was happening and have not since.
Mr. Mackey. Yeah, thank you for the question. Apologies, I'm not familiar with that road or that issue, but I can take the question on notice and come back in.
Sure. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from the public?
Sorry. No
flies on me. Yeah. If I'd spoken a little bit quicker at the start.
If you just give me 2 seconds to open up my notes, please. Okay, good evening. Alison Rogers, Tinderbox, on behalf of the Kimber Land Users Body. In the most recent hearings for the draft LPS with the TPC, the ones that took place in June, The planning authority have indicated on a number of occasions that there needs to be further review of zoning in Kingborough, and has even indicated that some of the zones allocated in the current iteration, that being the Irene Inc. report, may change subsequent to that strategic review. Under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, commonly known as LUPA, when a council acting as a planning authority reviews its local provision schedule or prepares amendments, its obligations to landowners and ratepayers primarily centre around public notification, consultation, and the right to be heard. I think it's safe to say that in the most recent process around the draft LPS, that maybe that fell short of the mark from the public perspective. Obviously, the key obligations included public notification and exhibition, advertising in the local paper, and an exhibition period that allows those documents to be made for public inspection. The position of the council at that point seemed to be that as long as the minimum statutory requirements were fulfilled, that you were doing your role in that. My question is, given the last couple of years around the draft LPS, the first question is, why hasn't that strategic review been done during the creation of what we've ended up with as four iterations of the draft LPS? What does the council determine is the process?
Rogers, can we take them one at a time?
Okay, sure. Yep.
Yeah.
They all relate, but yes.
Ms. Shakiti.
Thank you, and thank you for taking one at a time. So you're very right. There is strategic work to be done. That will then inform potentially future changes to the LPS, and there is a variety of work that needs to be done. Now, we don't anticipate that will be done as one overall review. It will relate potentially to different areas, different matters. So, for example, we might be looking at a structure plan for Kingston, or for example, like Huon Valley has done, looking at the rural living settlements. So it won't be done as one overall review. We acknowledge that that it would have been nice to have done a lot of this work either before or through the process. We haven't had capacity to do that, and the LPS has been quite consuming. In addition to that, the timing of various things sometimes isn't up to us either. So, for example, the timing of the LPS and the new planning scheme, that's all determined by the state, and you just sort of have to fit in to where you're at. So, yes, we acknowledge we would have really liked to have done some more work. In saying that, we definitely know it's needed, and there will be a focus on determining what it is and what those priorities are. And as part of any of that work, there will be consultation. So, of course, there's the minimum consultation under LUPA, as you pointed out. But I think it's really important that developing what those potential plans are or changes that the consultation is done to inform that, then you would go to consultation under the legislation. So that will be our plan. We don't have specific details around what it all looks like. We are just starting to get our head in that space and thinking about mapping that work out.
Thank you. So my second question was going to be exactly that. Have the council developed a policy yet around that and what that would look like? So given that you haven't, is there a process or a timeframe that you will go through to determine how that consultation will occur in the future. And my concern is that even as recently as the forum that we had on the disaster resilience policy, that it appears that cost can be a barrier for consulting with stakeholders, whoever they might be. And I'm just wondering if there is now a position around that. I think it's safe to say that the cost many years ago in relation to the draft LPS may have been less had that mail out occurred initially. And so, therefore, what steps are the council going to take to ensure that cost isn't always a barrier to public consultation?
Look, it's indulgent for me to answer this question, Ms. Rogers, because ultimately we're having an election in October, and I think the work with respect to strategic planning outcomes is going to happen after that, realistically, given what Ms. Shakuti has said. But I think you can take it as an absolute given that as somebody who has now been on council through the LPS process and is now the acting mayor as it draws to its conclusion, there is no possible way that consultation in relation to strategic planning decisions in future would be conducted in the same manner as the LPS for as long as I remain on council and for as long as I remain in this role, but noting that, of course, that's unlikely to happen before October. And for that same reason, I think it's very difficult to give you timeframes around when that work's going to occur and what the consultation package is going to look like. But like I said, I think you can take it as a given that while there are councillors in this room that remain around the table when those decisions are made, that consultation is going to look very different.
Okay, thank you. And my last question is, given that there is some more strategic reviewing to be done around zoning and land use, will those changes incur a cost to a landowner in terms of, like, if they are going to apply for a change of zone? So if we say theoretically this landowner may be zoned rural, for example, in the in this current LPS, and they then want to query that, I guess, and ask for a rural living consideration, given that there's still an outstanding sort of strategic review of things, will that come at a cost to the landowner itself going through that process, or are council going to take into consideration the fact that this perhaps should have taken place simultaneously with this current draft LPS?
So you might want to take it on notice, Ms. Rogers, but can I just clarify your question? Is what you're asking is if council were to undertake some future strategic planning work that dictated that a change of zoning was warranted for a particular area, would a resident in that area be required to pay if they made a representation to the consultation?
So I guess not knowing how this consultation and review is going to take place moving forward, I'm just reflecting on something that the Planning Authority mentioned during one of the most recent hearings, I think it was the last day actually before they went into recess, that some of the zones, so the question by the Tasmanian Planning Commission was, have you strategically chosen the right zone? And then the answer by the Planning Authority was that that there could possibly be more strategic review around that, and that some of these zones may well change as a result of that. So getting back to my first question, obviously, you know, this current iteration has been going on for nearly a decade. Shouldn't that review have happened simultaneously before delivering that draft LPS? And therefore, if in the short term something does change, is that going to be at a landowner's expense because they are also querying the end result, or is that something that will be considered in that process?
Mr. Stewart?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question. First of all, I would note that there's still a process that's live and underway at the moment, so there's no final determinations about the zones until the TBC makes it, and there's a great degree of analysis that the TBC will be putting into it. So I will note that the council's information profit is only one part of that equation, and the TBC still remains to make their determinations. As has been pointed out in the previous questions, the program that council will undertake with future strategic work won't necessarily be a cross-municipal piece of work. It'll likely be focused on specific areas where more work needs to be done to consider what the future looks like there. I think that's quite different from the process that we're in at the moment with the migration to the LPS. Where a member of the community decides to undertake a private plan change or scheme change, I think there's likely to be a cost in that. I don't think we're certainly not in a position to say, no, that's something that will be funded, that there is a cost associated with that. Where it forms part of a council program, I would suggest that that's a cost that will be part of council's work that's undertaken there. So I guess the answer to that is it depends.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from the public? Moving on to questions on notice from the public. We have answers to questions on notice in the agenda as listed on page 5, item 10. Questions without notice from council. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. Two questions from me. The first one relates to feral deer in Kingborough. In June, the Invasive Species Council and Frontier Economics released their report called A Buck Too Far, an analysis of the economic, social and environmental cost of deer in Tasmania. And that report found that in the Midlands and Eastern regions alone, feral deer are already costing Tasmania more than $53 million annually. And if the policies don't change, then the deer population is on track to grow, and therefore so will the cost. They're estimating almost $1.4 billion cost over the next 30 years. From Kingborough, this is where it relates to Kingborough, alarmingly those figures don't incorporate the true cost of deer because that analysis was limited to the Midlands and Eastern regions where the population data is available. So it also doesn't fully quantify the impacts to biodiversity, Aboriginal cultural heritage, disease risk, as feral deer populations can be a reservoir and vector for disease, particularly around foot and mouth. That's a big concern. And those costs specific to local councils. So my first question on this is, will our council undertake an analysis to determine the costs to Kingborough of feral deer, including costs to agriculture, damage to public reserves, vehicle damage and staff and resources management, particularly around Bruny Island and the feral deer population there?
Yes, Shakiti.
Thank you. Yes, we acknowledge that feral deer are a problem in Kingborough, but statewide as well. And we did endorse the Tasmanian government strategy on the eradication. So where we come into play is supporting that with the officers from NRE through education and monitoring, etc. To my knowledge, we've not got any further plans than that with deer. However, I suppose it's probably watch this space in terms of potential impacts to Kingborough and what councils. So primarily it's a state government role, but we do need to support that. So potentially we might do that, but at this point in time it's not planned.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I appreciate that answer. And because it is primarily a state government role, and I am of the opinion that the state government really does need to do more because this will be a cost that is borne by our council, and the slower that the state government is to provision the adequate resourcing, then the costs to our council will grow ever larger. So my question therefore is, does Kingborough Council support and increased state government funding and reform for feral deer control, particularly around eradication, or is that a matter for councillors to bring to the council as a motion, as opposed to, like, do we have a, my question is, do we currently support more funding from the state government for deer control, or we don't yet have policy on that?
We don't have a position in relation to that, Councillor Cordova. No, we don't have a position in relation to that, Councillor Cordova.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. My next question on a separate topic is around aquatic facility for Kimbra Sports Precinct, an update, requesting an update regarding the Kimbra Aquatic Facility Steering Committee, for which the meetings are currently paused. My first question on that really relates to, have we had any engagement from the Sports Minister, Nick Dygan, for example? Have we sent correspondence to the Sports Minister, letting the Sports Minister know about Kimbra's intentions regarding an aquatic facility?
Mr. Smith? No, we haven't sent correspondence to the Minister. The reason the committee was paused was because we were waiting on the outcome of a grant funding application, but we were subsequently unsuccessful in that. However, we've continued to pause the meeting because there is a body of work being undertaken at a regional level. There's a regional sport and rec strategy that is being prepared that will consider the issue of an aquatic facility for Kimbra as part of it, and that will be the subject of a future council workshop, and will come to council at some stage in the near future.
Thank you. That's great. Through you, Acting Mayor, my last question on this relates to our feasibility study, which we've already undertaken, February 2021. Is that feasibility strategy still current, or will it need to be updated with respect to the initiative that's just been discussed, or is it still considered to be a relevant document, or is it now considered out of date?
Mr. Smith? The document has some relevance, but I'd suggest that given the period of time and in particular the cost escalation in relation to the construction costs, which everyone knows have multiplied significantly over the past 5 years, there would need to be updating of that document in relation to costs and the associated implications for council.
Thank you. That's all.
Are there any further questions without notice from councillors? No, there being no other questions without notice. Item 11, questions on notice from councillors. There are questions answered in the agenda. Item 12, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Item 13, at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Moving to item 14.1 and the recommendation or recommended motion on page 10, can I please have a mover for the recommended motion? Moved in Councillor Richardson and seconded in Councillor Bain. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. This report is in response to a motion from our 2025 AGM calling for a review to the powers, to the delegated powers to ensure officers act strictly within their authority. And following that, we as council put a resolution on the 19th to refer the matter to the audit panel for consideration. The audit panel then considered the, did a partial review of the situation and considered whether further review was required. And following that, they have concluded that there is no further review required due to the adherence currently being quite high, currently being fine, I guess. So a couple of questions, if I may. I think it would be worthwhile just putting on record the makeup and, degree of qualification that sits within that audit panel.
That's a question.
Yes, sorry.
Sorry, Councillor. Mr. Spinks? Mr. Spinks, rather.
Through you, Acting Mayor. the audit panel comprises a combination of councillor representatives and also three independents. Under the Government Act, audit panels have to comprise some independent members, and one of those independents must be the chair. Our panel comprises three independent members and two councillor members.
Yeah,
Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. And again, the reason I think it's worthwhile putting that on record is it highlights that it was independently reviewed from people outside of the organisation, and they have concluded, and you know, they have a very important job, which is to make sure that the council is operating within the confines of the rules, and having those trusted and highly qualified independent people review the delegated authority and conclude that there is no requirement for further investigation puts my mind at ease, and I am comfortable to support the motion.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Gordon.
Thank you. Acting Mayor, I agree with what's in the discussion there of the motion and therefore the recommendation, but I guess I just wanted to unpack a little bit. Was there, with the AGM motion, and I'm looking out 2.2 on page 7, the proposal for a review of delegated powers be referred to councils. No, I'm not looking for that. Oh, yes, to call for, so 2.1, to call for a review of delegated powers to ensure officers act strictly within their authority. With that AGM motion, was there any supplementary material provided with respect to an issue that or something? What else was there? Just that?
This was true. Yeah, thank you. We've been back and reviewed the recording of the AGM, and there was no specific areas that were mentioned during the moving of that motion during the AGM.
Councillor Gordon. Thank you. And so since then, in correspondence with the either with the people that moved that motion or any further correspondence to the council, has there been any additional context or I guess having some additional specificity would mean that it's important that the review that was conducted relates to whatever the issues were. And so I'm just trying to understand what were the issues were that prompted members of the public to want to ensure, or like obviously everyone of us would want officers to act strictly within their authority. That seems self-evident. So I'm just really interested to know what was the issue underlying that? Were we ever made aware of what that issue might have been?
Mr. Stewart? Yeah, thanks for the question. There was no, like I've mentioned in the previous answer, no specific issues that were identified. Broadly speaking, we're aware that, you know, during that time, there are a number of questions that were raised during the AGM that related to the implementation of the local provision schedule of the paying scheme. So that was one lens that was considered and information was provided to the audit panel around it.
Thank you.
Councillor Gordon.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'll conclude my remarks with the following idea. It's important that we, as a council, try to improve the trust deficit that I think some members of the community perceive around council's operations. And in order to achieve that, I think we need to be really transparent in our communication and to where there are issues to explain them and to try and have a good dialogue. And I guess my concern here is that it would be very easy for members of the public to say, well, you know, obviously there was some concern originally that provoked that AGM motion. And then before the council is something that says, well, we've looked at it and we don't think there's a problem there. And so I think it's very easy, therefore, for those same members of the public to say, well, they investigated themselves and they found nothing. But it doesn't get back to the core issue here, which is there's obviously some concern and disquiet. And so I just think it would be really beneficial for whatever that issue is, whatever the supplementary material or the evidence or the concern or the allegation that there is, I think that at some stage should be discussed, because otherwise we're going to be in this infinite regress
where people will say, we have a concern with council, we want you to act strictly within your guidance. And then we say, well, we looked at it, and we don't really know what you're talking about because you provided no information about what you're talking about. And then secondly, we've reviewed ourselves and we think it's fine. Well, with no specificity around what the issue actually was. And then here we go on the merry-go-round again, where they say they investigated themselves and found nothing. And I'm concerned about that because it will go on forever with a lack of specificity around what exactly was being hinted at here. And something was being hinted at, clearly, otherwise it wouldn't have made its way to the AGM. So that's a comment rather than a question. I'd be interested to hear if there is anything more that can be done to try and help this situation vis-a-vis communication with our stakeholders.
I think Mr. Stewart's going to answer your comment.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the comment. I can answer it with a comment. If there is any specific allegation around where council officers have overstepped delegations, I'm more than happy to investigate them on their merits. So where there are specific concerns, I'm happy to look into
them. Fantastic. Thank you very much. That's
thank you. Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Richardson, summing up? No? That being the case, I put the motion as printed in the agenda. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. The ayes have it and it's carried unanimously. Moving to item 14.2, the election caretaker period policy and the recommended motion on page 10. Can I have a mover for the recommended motion, please? Moved in Councillor Fox and seconded in Councillor Midley. Councillor Fox.
It's the conclusion to this motion states that an update of Council's election period caretaker policy has been undertaken with a minor change made to allow provision to award tenders that relate to externally funded projects that had previously been endorsed by Council, which means that we don't have to wait till after the elections to continue the work that's previously decided. Thank you.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly on this one, just to make sure that there's ongoing work, obviously the council and councillors have various roles on special committees, so whether that's at Legat or Copping Refuse Site Joint Disposal Authority and Copping Sea Cell, TAS Water, so on and so forth. Does this policy, if, for example, Copping Sea Cell has activities that are larger than the 1%, my question is, does this policy impact any of the business of the organisations for which Council has an involvement? Will this impinge or impact any of that?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you for the question. No, it doesn't impact the business as usual activities of any other organisation other than Council.
Thank you. Final question is just around the discussion about the AFL High Performance Centre. If this is an issue that we perceive as being something that will happen again potentially in 4 years. We can't see what the future holds, but wouldn't it make sense to, I guess the changes that have been made with respect to, you know, there might be a risk that we have to spend more than the 1% during the AFL High Performance Centre build because that has to happen at speed. Are we going to have to keep updating this policy every 4 years if in 4 years' time there's another big build going on in Kingra? Are we going to piecemeal, with a piecemeal approach, amend the policy, or do we need to make the policy more robust so that actually maybe instead of it being 1%, it becomes 10%?
Well, the clause doesn't specifically refer to the AFL High Performance Centre. It refers to projects that are externally funded and have previously been endorsed by Council. So I think the answer to the question is no. There wouldn't need to be a further amendment. It would be reviewed again. About nine.
Yep. That's fine. Mm. Thank you. That's all for me.
Any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor.
For starters, I'll just say I think it's an excellent policy, and I'm a bit surprised it's not statewide across all councils. I think it'd be good to have in place to everyone. Just one question, and it's in relation to where notices of motion sit under this policy. Because I guess, for one, they could potentially sign the council up to something major. And the second point is they could potentially use this as a bit of a promotional tool, I think, for people who are going to run for the next election. So just interested to know where they sit within this policy.
Mr. Stewart, Mr. Stewart? I think the answer to that would be that the business of council goes on during the election caretaker period, and councils are quite entitled to bring forth notices of motion. Where a notice of motion would be inappropriate under the policy is where it meets the definition of a major decision, and that is defined within the policy. So I would look at that definition under the policy as to guidance for whether a notice of motion is appropriate or not.
Councillor. Thank you. I'm happy with that explanation. I guess it's just on the councillors to make sure that they use the notice of motion as they're intended to, not for any election purposes. Happy with that.
Thank you, Councillor Baines. Not for selection. Are there any further contributions from
Councillor? One more question, if I may.
Councillor Portover.
It was just around this 1%, the 1% of council's net revenue quantum. I guess what I was trying to get at before, how do we know that 1% is the right amount? I mean, how do we test that 1% as opposed to it being 10 or 0.5? It's just pulled out of.
Mr. Smith? The 1% figure came from mainland councils that have this policy in place, and it has been adopted by most councils in Tasmania. Some go for a threshold of 250,000. Some go for 250,000 or 1%, whichever is greater. This council has previously adopted the 1% of annual revenue as its threshold. But, you know, the decision as to where that sits is up to council, but it's reasonably universal that is the accepted figure.
Thank you. Any further contributions? If not, for my own brief contribution, very proud that Kingborough was the first municipality in the state to introduce the caretaker policy, something that I pushed for very heavily back when it was instituted. Very proud that we did that, and most other councils in Tasmania sought to follow that example. I think it's a great example of good governance, and that it was initiated here is a point of pride. So I thank you for your support for the policy ongoing. Councillor Fox.
Nothing more to say. Thank you.
Thank you. I put the motion, therefore, at item 14.2. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. Moving to page 19 and item 14.3, Local Government Association of Tasmania General Management Committee voting. Can I have a mover that we move to discuss? Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. And so we're in discussion. It is in the hands of councillors how they wish to proceed with this process. Councillor Cordova?
I would like to propose that we put Heather Chong as first preference and Tim Marks as second preference.
I'd second that if it was a motion.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything to say about the matter? Councillor Bain?
Thank you. Just a question. Do we know how long the term is for? Is it just till the elections, or is it for a set period?
Mr. Stewart, Mr. Smee? The worst thing is that I knew it was coming too, and I didn't want to.
Yeah, thanks for that. So my understanding is that the GMC, or the General Management Committee, elections are held midway through typical council term. This is the vacancy created through Councillor Paula Root's resignation. So I can't give you an exact time period, but I'd suggest it would be a couple of years. However, noting that we have elections in October and that sometimes does trigger change in these roles, so there may be further elections required depending on changes that may or may not occur through the election agency.
Councillor Bain.
I don't think
so. No. Look, we've got a suggestion from Councillor Cordova that we vote for Councillor Chong, which I'd be happy to support as well. For the purposes of the recording and those watching, I'm getting a lot of nods. All right, so can I have a mover that we move out of discussion, please? Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. So could somebody please therefore move a motion?
Yes, so moved. And I just want to make sure that in A that we correctly spell the surnames of the other councillors there.
Yes. Sorry, A I should be Chong. With an O. Thank you.
Second.
Mover and Councillor Cordova, a seconder and Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova, is there anything to say about the motion?
No.
Given debate's not opened, I think we actually do. Well, is there? Does anybody wish to speak to the motion? No. I'll put the motion as it's written on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. Item 14.4, appendices. Can I have a mover for the recommended motion, please? Move Councillor Richardson, seconded Councillor Dean. Councillor Richardson. Are there any comments or Councillor Midgley?
Sure, thank you, Acting Mayor. Just, it's always great to have the appendices with a capital projects report. There's a lot of matters that I know are really, important to the community and loved by the community. We've got the Davies Road reconstruction, which was definitely a community interest there. The Browns Road reconstruction stage two, congratulations on that. It seems to have gone really smoothly. It's looking really good. Thank you. And the big love of the Drew Point basketball and netball court. I've heard that that's been, really popular. And there's a few other projects there as well. So, it's just, really great. We hear about these projects. We read about them in our budgets. And it's great to have images and updates. Thanks so much.
Any further contributions? Councillor Corder.
Yes, I echo Councillor Midgley's praise for some of those really good developments that are happening. And a huge thank you to the staff who undertake the actual groundwork and operations. I think it's very easy, particularly at election time, I see on social media various people kind of trying to claim credit when actually it's, council staff are out there, building these things and renovating them and maintaining them to their credit. So thank you very much to the staff. My question relates to the digital experience update. So this, I'm now looking at the audit panel minutes.
Councillor Cordova, that's an item in closed session.
Forgive me. Sorry. So I have no further questions. And good save. Yeah.
not for that specific reason, I might add, but it is an item in closed session.
Yeah, sorry. I'd
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Fox?
I drove up Browns Road the other day over the weekend and I was really impressed with the work that's been there, put on there. I know it's been a very expensive project. I guess it's what's underground that we don't see is where the money's gone. But I also appreciate the photographs that are such they say 1,000 words, and it's really good to get this visual impact of the work and the quality of work and the amount of work that is obviously required in these projects. So congratulations to the engineering staff.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Are there any further contributions? No. Councillor Richardson, no. I put the recommended motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion, and so I move on to confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance, can I have a mover please, that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items. 1, confirmation of minutes. 2, applications for leave of absence. 3, provision of internal audit services, expression of interest process and recommendation. And 4, audit panel minutes. Move Councillor Richardson, second Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. In accordance with the council meetings and councillor workshops audio recording. The CEO has just reminded me that there is a correction to be made to an item on this evening's agenda, and that is in relation to petitions still to be actioned. There is a petition still to be actioned, being opposition to proposed dog exercise and obedience training facility at Cedarbrook Grove Reserve, Lot 1, Toowoomba Road. So consider me corrected. And with that correction made, in accordance with the council meetings and council workshops audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. And the open session of council adjourns at 6:16 p.m. Thank you all for your attendance or for watching along at home. Good night. And with that,